Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
From KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauley and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Only have you for about 40 minutes tonight. We're going to get out of here at about 6:45. We've got SLU Billikens basketball rolling your way this evening. The Bills are on a roll. They have won four of their first five conference games. And tonight they are playing host to LaSalle over at Chaffetz Arena. Bob Ramsey, Earl Austin Jr., they've got the broadcast at 6:45, a 7 o'clock tip-off. If you're looking for something to do this evening, I'm sure tickets do remain available for the game tonight. And we'll see what SLU can do. It could be a high-flying kind of night when the Billikens and LaSalle matched up in Philadelphia last year. SLU put up 102 on them, the most ever points scored by a Billiken team in an A-10 conference game, and it was just one shy of the all-time conference single-game scoring record of 103, which they had all the way back in 1956. So we'll see if they can repeat that tonight as they match up against LaSalle. As always, we do welcome in your phone calls, your text messages, your tweet, your voice messages, however you want to get in contact with us here on Sports Open Line. You can call or text at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, or you can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. Coming up on the show tonight, Brett Coleman's going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. We'll talk all things NFL football with him as we'll see his thoughts on what's going to be coming up this weekend. AFC Championship game, of course, a lot of local interest. You'll be able to hear it here on KMOX as the Chiefs and Bills are going to match up against each other. Kansas City looking for another trip to the Super Bowl and looking for another bit of playoff success against Buffalo. The other game coming up this weekend is the Commanders and Eagles. I want to start with a little bit of baseball. And, you know, we've spent the last couple days kind of doing a post-mortem of everything we learned out of winter warm-up, and I feel like especially yesterday on the show, we kind of went through all the major storylines. The only thing we didn't talk about yesterday, I'll just mention this really quickly in case you missed it. The only thing we didn't talk about on the show yesterday that I think was a really important takeaway out of the winter meetings, actually there were two things, so I lied. There's two things. Thing number one, I thought it was really interesting what Tink Hentz said to me when I was talking to him on Saturday morning. He's attempting to make it through a season healthy. And one of the ways he's trying to do that is by putting on a fair amount of weight in the weight room. And when the season came to an end, he went down to Jupiter and he was at the team complex for about 3 months in the weight room on an every single day basis. That could end up being a really, really key development in this whole thing, because my belief is that Tink is going to be competing for an MLB job at some point this season. I don't even think it's an impossibility that if he has a really, really impressive spring, that maybe you look at bringing him north as a relief pitcher. I know the idea is that he's still viewed as a starter. I think there's issues with that because of his lack of innings that he's thrown in his career. He's never thrown more than, I believe it's 97. And last year he was around 75, 76. He had some injuries last year. So he wasn't, you can't really rely on him to be a big league starter right now because he hasn't thrown enough innings. And you don't want to jump him to, you know, even jumping him to like 130 or 140 would be a little bit dicey. That's almost doubling his inning load from last year to this year. You're kind of asking for an injury at that point. So I thought that was a really important thing that came out of winter warm-up that we haven't really gotten the opportunity to talk about, just that he really did a lot of work, and he had never done that before where he just checked into Jupiter, Florida, and just stayed there for 3 months working out. And he left for a little bit, but he'll obviously be back here very soon, as we're just a couple weeks out from pitchers and catchers reporting. So that was one thing. The other thing that I thought was interesting, and Ryan Helsley did say this to the media, he also said it in a conversation with me that I recorded that's going to run during the Countdown to Opening Day show tomorrow, but I can give it away a little bit. He mentioned the fact that as of now, the Cardinals have not come to him about any type of conversations about a contract extension. And I would assume that part of the reason you don't have those discussions yet with Helsley is because he still may end up being a trade piece, and you probably want to create some flexibility there, and you might not want to engage on that. But at the same time, If there's an opportunity for Helsley to remain a Cardinal long-term, I think it'd be a good thing. It probably depends on what the number looks like and what the Cardinals are going to be doing with payroll when we get into 2026 and beyond. But those were a couple things that came out over the weekend that I thought were interesting. A, that Team Kent's spent a lot of time at the complex in Florida working on things. And I think he's going to make an impact on the big league team at some point this year. And I don't think it's going to be as a starter. I think his first assignment in the big leagues is likely to be a relief pitcher. And we know his stuff plays. We know that. Like, you see him in Major League spring training last year. We know his stuff can play at the big league level. That could be a really interesting piece to add to the back end of the bullpen. You also do have to take into account the fact that John Mozeliak has openly spoken about the fact that the two things that they want to add before this offseason comes to an end and before they get to spring training, they'd still like to add a piece or two for the bullpen, especially guys who can pitch in the back end. You know, I think you look at the loss of an Andrew Kittredge, and you'd like to somebody, if not to fill that role, to fill one of those high leverage roles. You don't want to be stuck in a situation where you always have three guys for the seventh, eighth, and ninth. You'd like to have some other pieces in there, and Ryan Fernandez and Matthew Liberatore and some others are certainly going to get opportunities, but I can see where they would like to have another arm or two there that can pitch in high leverage innings, and they continue to talk about a right-handed bat that can also play in the outfield. And we're at a point right now where it feels like things are starting to pick up again, at least a little bit from a free agent standpoint. There continues to be, you know, a handful of kind of not high profile, kind of low profile signings on just about an everyday basis. That's where we're at right now. The Cardinals continue to wait on Alex Bregman and what's going to happen with him, because once Bregman gets his destination, then the whatever the market's going to be for Nolan Arenado, it probably establishes itself at that point, and we'll see what happens. If Bregman ends up going to the Red Sox, which there's as good of a shot of him going to the Red Sox as any other team. It seems like the Red Sox and the Tigers are the two teams that get mentioned the most. But if Bregman ends up with the Red Sox, at that point, the possibility of Arenado being with the Cardinals when they report to camp, you know, that probably becomes a much larger possibility. We are going to take a break. We'll talk some NFL football coming up in just a moment. Brett Coleman's going to join us. We'll preview the weekend coming up. That's next. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We're coming up on one of the best sports days of the year coming up on Sunday. It is Conference Championship Day in the NFL, as we are going to have two really good games, especially the AFC game, but the NFC game, Commanders and Eagles. And then, as you'll hear right here on KMOX, St. Louis is home for Chiefs football. The Chiefs and Bills are going to match up, and the winners of those games will go on to match up against each other in the Super Bowl. Right now, very happy to welcome on to the program. He is Brett Coleman, creator of The Film Room on YouTube, also part of the Bootleg Football Podcast. You follow him on Twitter at Brett Coleman, KOLLMANN. Brett, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me for, I don't know, what is it, the seventh straight AFC championship for the Chiefs?
Yeah, they keep getting there, and they are favored in this game. Do you like them in the contest against Buffalo?
I do, and I know a lot of people are going to, you know, look back to the regular season matchup against Buffalo and, you know, they're going to look at just overall how the Chiefs look this year. And even though they had a dominant win-loss record, they didn't look to be a dominant team as far as point differential goes. But if I'm looking at specifically how the Chiefs match up against the Bills in round two, I think it's actually a, I don't want to say favorable matchup, but it's a better matchup than people think it is. Getting Jalen Watson back is huge because they're such a heavy man coverage team on third down. And the Bills aren't really terrific against man coverage to begin with. But Jalen coming off a game where he allowed, you know, 8 total yards last week, you know, he seems to be back and rocking and rolling. So I kind of feel like looking at the matchup for the Chiefs defense against the Bills offense, it's actually kind of favorable.
What have you seen from the Chiefs? Because they went through most of the season playing close game after close game after close game. And then as they got into the final months of the season, they were a little bit more dominant against the Browns, the Texans, and the Steelers. The final three games where their starters played. And then they looked, you know, the Houston game in the postseason, they were able to pull away and do enough, obviously, in that game. It feels like they flipped some sort of switch. As you look at them on film, what have you seen that they've changed?
I would say the three biggest problems with the Chiefs during the regular season was A, dealing with injuries to the receiving core. And I really don't think that Travis was all the way, ready to go until about halfway through the season, because he certainly had a pretty fun summer. He kind of got activated as the year went on and kind of looked like a little bit more like his former self. But, you know, you're dealing with injuries to Hollywood. You're dealing with injuries to Rashee. They're trying to bring along a rookie receiver who all of a sudden gets thrust into a larger role than he was used to. And, you know, you have Travis taking a little while to get back into looking like Travis. You also have arguably the worst offensive tackle tandem in the entire NFL for most of the year until they figured out that Joe Tooney is actually their best one. And, you know, defensively, again, when you lose your best option at CB2 for a majority of the year, they were really struggling to run the style of defense that they like to run. Not to mention, you know, if your best edge rusher is actually a defensive tackle in Chris Jones, and it was basically Chris Jones with like a side dish of Karlaftis versus the world as a pass rush, like you can kind of see why this team, even though they were winning, they did have significant issues. Now you look at them again, Jalen's back. So their secondary is more capable of playing the style they want to. They're getting weapons back. Travis is full as, you know, back to being Travis. Tooney has kind of, I don't want to say fixed, but alleviated their issues at tackle. They've done a remarkable job of staying afloat while also trying to work out their problems. And now the majority of their problems are worked out. And so there's kind of nothing left to complain about.
So for those of us who watch the games, it certainly feels like, even if you're rooting for the Chiefs, it feels like the Chiefs get a lot of calls. And then today, Patrick Mahomes says, the referees are calling the game down the middle. They're not giving the Chiefs any extra calls. I'm not saying the referees are doing it on purpose, but what's your reaction when you hear Mahomes say that he feels like that the referees have not gifted them any calls this year?
I mean, I kind of expect him to say that, yeah. So I don't really hold that against him, because that's just, of course, the answer he's going to give. I'll say this. I grew up a Texans fan. I feel like if I was going to look at that game objectively and take my fan glasses off, they did not win because of the refs. They won because the Texans special teams were terrible and they gave up 8 sacks and they couldn't protect C.J. Stroud. Anybody who says the only reason the Chiefs won that game is because of the refs, either A, just wasn't paying attention, or B, is just tired of the Chiefs. And so if I, a Texans fan, am saying that the refs were not the issue, right? Now, the thing that I had an issue with was the games that Pat plays, you know, when he's kind of running around and, you know, slowing down on the sidelines so that, you know, contact gets initiated and then taking a dive. Like, I really hate that. And it's because Pat's too good for that. Like, you're not James Harden. You know, like, I need you to be the face of the league, and the face of the league doesn't take dives. And I know Chiefs fans are going to say, well, Josh Allen does it all the time. You're right. And I hate it when he does that too. I don't think that diving should be part of the culture of the NFL. I really do think the league kind of needs to legislate that out. And I also think, you know, when it comes to these kind of bang, bang, roughing the passer calls where a quarterback is running around and then they dive at the last second and, you know, they're going low and the defender's going low and there's a, you know, a hit to the helmet. We need to have some sort of hard line definition in there of, hey, if a quarterback is running around and he is a runner and then he slides at the last possible moment and the defender is within two steps and he's making an actual effort to hit where the core of the quarterback used to be, we can't penalize that, right? We have to incentivize quarterbacks to protect themselves and get down quicker because we can't just leave it up to the defenders to not be wrong or else you end up with, you know, Trevor Lawrence type situations. So for me, again, I know there's a long answer. The refs were not the reason Houston lost. I really hated the dive, and the league has to do something with the rules to take that out of the game because ultimately it's going to lead to Mahomes getting hurt if guys think, well, we're going to get flagged anyway. I might as well tee off. So it's in his interest to stay healthy by not doing that.
NFL analyst Brett Coleman continuing to join us. NFC Championship game. A lot of people surprised that Washington is in there. Obviously, Jaden Daniels has been incredible in the postseason. The Eagles, they're the team that's supposed to be here and supposed to be in this spot. For the Commanders to have a chance against Philadelphia, does it largely rest on Jaden Daniels being able to go out there and once again be spectacular?
You know, this is going to be a really, really hard matchup, specifically for the Washington offense against this Philly defense. And I know they put up a bunch of points last time, but the key difference here is Sam Cosmi, who's Washington's best offensive lineman. He's a guard. He just tore his ACL in the last game. And the reason why that matters, and not to get too deep into scheme here, but I trust your audience to follow me on this one. So Vic Fangio kind of diverted from the type of defense that he normally likes to call in the first two matchups. He played a lot of cover three and a lot of cover one. That means they're dropping a safety down in the box because when you have a mobile quarterback like Jaden Daniels, that kind of evens up the numbers in the run game and it gives the offense an advantage. So you bring that safety down, you give the defense a numerical advantage back, and they can play the run that way. However, when you're talking about an offensive line that loses its best player in Sam Cosmi, and you got to block Jalen Carter with a backup right guard, I think Vic Fangio is going to, you know, kind of go back to the style that he's played traditionally with a lot of too high safety looks and having kind of safe coverage structures on the back end and trusting that his defensive line is going to be able to stop the run with even numbers because they just can't block Jalen Carter. He's kind of a force multiplier there. And once they do that, there's not really another answer that the Commanders have. Because when they play these quarters coverages and quarter-quarter half coverages, you've got a safety over the top of Terry. You're playing four over three on the other side, so you can't throw the screen game. And Washington just doesn't really have the answers for that. They can try to run the ball. I assume they're going to try to run the ball. But again, with a banged-up offensive line against that Eagles D-line, I don't think that's going to work either. So there's just kind of the potential for this game to snowball, especially when you look at roster against roster and you realize that other than quarterback, there is literally no position group on the Commanders team that is better than the Eagles. It's literally just quarterback. And for me, that's a recipe for disaster here.
Do the Eagles get the credit they deserve? Because it feels like they are as smart as any organization in football. I guess we could take issue with their head coach, Nick Sirianni, at times, but from an organizational standpoint, they do so many smart things. They find really good players. And in this era right now where we're so stuck talking about Kansas City and Buffalo and Baltimore, it feels like we don't talk about the Eagles maybe as much as we should.
And I kind of think that that's it's fatigue isn't the right word, but I almost feel like people don't take them seriously because of the up and down play of Jalen Hurts, right? Which is, I think, is an entirely different conversation. And I feel like people always kind of revert, you know, when talking about the playoffs and who the true contenders are, they always revert to just, well, who's the best quarterback, right? Because, you know, Mahomes wins a bunch of rings and, you know, Josh Allen's there. And Joe Burrow made a Super Bowl and Stafford won a Super Bowl. And it always just feels like reductionist where people are like, well, who's the best quarterback and who's the best head coach? You know, if we're looking at the Eagles here, they don't have the best quarterback left in the playoffs. In fact, I'd rank him fourth out of fourth, and that's no disrespect to Jalen Hurts. I think he's a good quarterback, but like we're dealing with some pretty heavy hitters here in the final four. And Nick Sirianni is also ranked four out of four in head coaches that are left. And so people don't really take them as seriously as they should, despite the fact that if we're just looking roster here, like the work that Howie Roseman's done, they have the best everything else, right? So this weekend, I think, is going to be a really interesting case study for what matters the most here, roster or quarterback and head coach.
A couple more things for you before we get you out of here. Brett Coleman is continuing to join us. When it was rumored that it was likely that Aaron Glenn was going to become the head coach of the New York Jets, you tweeted out that you really liked that hire. What do you like about Glenn and this potential fit in New York with the Jets?
Well, for one, I think he's a great developer of talent. And we saw that when, you know, even back when he was a position coach in New Orleans. I think he's an excellent developer of talent. He actually started his career as a scout for a couple years. So I think he kind of has a good understanding of what he likes in a player. So I think he's going to be, going to have a nice kind of handshake, so to speak, between himself and the front office, because he used to work on that side of the ball, after his playing career was over. And I think if you're looking at just him as a coach, you know, he kind of the work that he did with that Lions defense with all those injuries, I really think it was remarkable, because they lost so many guys and he still cooked up the best possible defense he could. You know, he lost his best player a month and a half into the year. And, you know, they still went on a massive run where it wasn't just, oh, it's a 40-35 game every single week because the offense is so good. Like, they had dominant defensive performances there, you know, with your best player all of a sudden being Aleem McNeil. So I think his ability to develop talent, his ability to kind of change on the fly based on which talent is available to him when guys get hurt, you know, the fact that he's a great leader, he's a former player, so he's going to connect to players really well. Like, I just think it's a home run hire. I really don't think the Jets could have done better here. I'm really curious to see what kind of staff he fills out underneath him, but I really do love this hire.
The Jaguars are a mess right now. When they made the coaching change, they were asked about their general manager and Trent Baalke, whether or not they were going to keep him around. They said it would be suicide if they were to have a complete turnover. And now, after Liam Cohen decides not to even engage with them on another interview, they make the change general manager. I mean, can it get any worse than what it is right now for the Jaguars?
I mean, it's just been this way for years at this point, right? I just can't believe that Trent Baalke got another GM job to begin with. Like, after everything that happened in San Francisco, I could not believe that he got another shot. And not only did he get another shot in Jacksonville, he got three shots in Jacksonville, honestly. Three shots that he shouldn't have gotten. And it was very clear, you know, during the season that Trent Baalke had built a really, really poor roster overall. He had done a terrible job as far as, hitting on a lot of draft picks, managing their cap situations. Like, I just looked at that Jags team and I said, this is 2 years away from being even a playoff team, let alone a contending team, right? And that's Trent Baalke's fault. And for them to go into the offseason and say, oh, no, we're going to retain him, you know, this guy that's known for getting coaches fired, we're going to retain him. Like, how could they possibly have an expectation that anybody serious would want that job? I'm just beside myself for the thought process there. Like, who in their right mind would want that job? And the fact that they, you know, basically just got a hard no from Ben Johnson from the start. You know, they got a hard no from Liam Cohen. Like, and this is like the third year that's happened, right? Like, how often do you have to have people around the league tell you, no, we're not going to work with Trent Baalke before you get rid of him? Apparently, 3 years. So it's kind of their own fault, right? It's absolutely their own fault. Jags fans don't deserve it. Jags fans don't deserve this kind of incompetence at the top, but they're stuck with it. And I really do feel for him.
Brett Coleman does an amazing job analyzing the NFL. You can follow him on Twitter at Brett Coleman, K-O-L-L-M-A-N-N. Brett, we really appreciate you taking some time with us. Enjoy the weekend, and hopefully we can catch up again moving forward.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Brett Coleman joining us here on the program. We will take one more break. We'll come back, have you for just a couple more minutes, and then we'll hand things off to Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. They've got Billikens basketball tonight over at Chaffetz Arena as they are going to match up against LaSalle. We're back with more in just a moment here on KMOX. Just a few minutes left in this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line. We are done early today because we've got SLU Billikens basketball tonight. They are matched up against LaSalle over at Chaffetz Arena. Game time is in about 20 minutes or so, and in about 5 minutes, our coverage with Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. set to begin. We'll see if SLU can continue their really good run. You know, they had that loss against VCU, and A, VCU is good, B, the Siegel Center is one of the toughest places to play, and C, it's especially tough for the Billikens because they've never won in that building. That's an interesting week for them because they stayed in Richmond the whole time. They went from playing on Tuesday against VCU to playing at Richmond on Saturday. You're on the road that much time. Sometimes that can be good for your team. Sometimes it can be the exact opposite. But they came back with a really hard-fought, good win at Richmond. And that's another place that's pretty tough to play in the league. I thought that said a lot about this team and the progress that they have made in a relatively short amount of time. And now tonight's a night where you never take anything for granted. You never assume anything about a win, but they should win. They should beat LaSalle tonight. And all these conference games mean so much for so many reasons after you had a non-conference season where you did not accomplish everything that you wanted to accomplish. Stacking up as many wins in conference play does a couple things. A, it can help out with that resume a little bit. Not that there's really a scenario where you're getting an at-large bid. But every time you win a game, it puts yourself in better position for the conference tournament where you have a little bit of an easier road, because if they want to be an NCAA tournament team, it's likely going to take a magical run through the conference tournament. So you want to have the best path possible. So really like seeing what we're seeing right now from the Billikens. We continue to see a really tight rotation, and we'll see what SLU can do tonight. Again, Bob Ramsey, Earl Austin Jr. on the call coming up in just a few moments. Tough one last night for Mizzou. They go to Austin and lose to a Texas team that had a tough start to their SEC schedule. Texas winning an SEC game for just the second time last night. It happens so often. For whatever reason, it happens all the time where a team is ranked and their first game after moving into the top 25, they end up getting beat. That's what happens last night. I don't take too much away from it. Tough. I mean, the Tigers could have won had they not given up so many offensive rebounds. They shot terribly, but it was a bad night at the office, and they'll try to get back going this past weekend. Again, SLU Billikens basketball tonight. Don't go anywhere. Bob Ramsey, Earl Austin Jr. have the call of the game next here on KMOX.